106.7 KROQ FM HD1 Pasadena, Los Angeles.
All systems go.
LA and OC's only new rock. The world famous K-Rock.
Well, how about that? Hey, good morning to you. It's 6 a.m. Welcome to 106.7 K-Rock KROQ. Hello. This is Scott Mason here with you every Sunday morning as we do Open Line. What is this show? Where have you been? Well, every Sunday morning when we do Open Line, we basically shut the music down for about an hour. We bring guests in. We talk about things that are going on in and around Southern California. Sometimes in and around the world. And again, sometimes in and around just your particular mind. You never know here. It is Sunday morning. It is early, but lots of people up, and I'm happy to have you here on the show. 1-800-520-1067 would be the phone number. 1-800-520-1067. If you're listening over the internet, krock.com. You could, and you're listening outside California, outside the U.S., get a lot of people calling from foreign countries. 323-520-1067 would work, too. So those are the numbers that get you through. We're happy to have you here. We do it every Sunday morning. What else would you like to know? Besides, Southern California seems to be burning. But we'll get to more of that later on. All right. So we are here together this morning. We're going to be talking about, this morning is about, emergency preparedness. How about that? Emergency preparedness, planning, and coordination of those kind of things. Stuff that you probably should know, or stuff that maybe you've learned about or heard about, but don't seem to practice enough. Emergency preparedness, disasters, and the big one. So we'll see what happens here this morning. Should be interesting, that's for sure. Mark, how are you this morning? Mark is a Mark Benthian. Did I say your last name right? Mark Benthian is the communications director for the Southern California Earthquake Center at USC and the executive director for the Earthquake Country Alliance. Thank you so much for being in with us this morning. And I also like to say good morning to Ken Conda, who just, well, good timing, just walked in the door here, the program manager and PIO for the LA County Chief Executive Office and the Office of Emergency Management. Whew, long title.
It's a long title. Good morning.
So you've been busy.
It's been very, very busy.
You know, not like there's not fires going on in Southern California. You know, when we're talking about earthquakes, we're talking about disasters. Besides earthquakes, we got to talk about fires in California. And they happen every year. Seems like it's inevitable, as earthquakes are inevitable living in Southern California. You know, just people seem to be used to fires. Earthquakes, people, you know, scare the living daylight out of. So we'll chat a little bit about that this morning. It's good to see you this morning. Mark, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, again, I'm with the Southern California Earthquake Center at USC. We are a federally funded research center from the National Science Foundation and the U.S. Geological Survey. And we really bring together all the scientists in Southern California universities, but also from many other universities around the world, to try to understand what's going on here in terms of our earthquakes, in terms of all the faults, understand when they might have earthquakes and what the shaking in those earthquakes might be like. Then my job is to try to communicate that information out to the public so we can make better decisions.
Well, that's great. And Ken, tell me about yourself. You're with the County of Los Angeles.
I work for the Chief Executive Office, the Office of Emergency Management. So when you talk about where we live in the Los Angeles County area, we are the disaster capital of the world. We have wildfires right now taking place in Los Angeles County. And then what Mark was talking about is earthquakes. We're in Earthquake Central as well, too.
You know, it's interesting. I went back to school a number of years ago, right after the Northridge earthquake. Was that 94? I was going back to school for another degree. And one of the classes that they happened to offer that year, because it was Cal State Northridge, and the place was in pretty bad shape after that earthquake. Very bad shape, as a matter of fact. So they offered a class that one semester after on earthquakes and disasters like that. And I took the class, and it was a fascinating class. And I always thought to myself, well, people living in Southern California, why is this class not mandatory like in either junior high or senior high school? Because it's so important living here that you understand what earthquakes are all about, where they come from. The more you know about something, the less you fear it, and the more you prepare for it, and the better you do through it. Yeah, people have all sorts of thoughts about earthquake. Like, oh my God, the ground's going to open. It's going to suck me up. You know, I mean, people believe those kind of things.
Right, or California's going to fall in the ocean. Yeah. All these different types of myths that are out there. Earthquake weather and you know, the earthquakes happen at a certain time of day. All of these are different myths that we have to deal with before we can even begin to communicate the truth about earthquakes.
So we all live here in Southern California, and we choose to live here. Nobody forces anyone to live here. So we all live here in Southern California. We all know that we are going to have an earthquake here. We've had them. We will continue to have them. They are part of California, Southern California. You live in an active earthquake region. Guess what? The ground will shake. The question is, how do we, as humans, survive, and how do we protect our property so it survives? I would imagine that is the big question, because no one's going to sit here and say, well, how do I prevent an earthquake?
Right.
It just doesn't. You're not.
Now, that's the subject of TV miniseries and, you know, fantasy about how to prevent earthquakes. What we're really looking at is how to prevent damage. And there are actions that people can take as individuals, and we can take as society to minimize the damage in earthquakes.
Now, there's certain things. We have an hour, so we'll cover a lot of this morning. But what should people know? If there's one thing that people should learn in, you know, in either high school, junior high, whatever, what should that be? If there's one, and I know there's more than one thing, but what should people really take home with them and keep forefront in their mind, not way back with the cobwebs?
In terms of knowledge about earthquakes or how to be safe?
I would say how to be safe.
Okay, the most important thing people should know is what to do during an earthquake. There's a lot of different things people have heard over the years, or there's a lot of, you know, kind of gut reaction that you want to do when an earthquake happens. And so what the thing is that you're supposed to do, we learn in school and we should be learning throughout our lives and practicing throughout our lives, is drop, cover, and hold on.
It's not get into the doorway like some of us have learned through the years.
Right. That has been said for many years, but really it doesn't protect you from things that are falling where you're in the room you're at, which really is the greatest source of injuries in an earthquake.
Or imagine the door itself slamming on you.
Yeah, people trying to come into the door with you. And also there's an issue there where you're trying to stand and hold on during what could be very strong shaking, easily knock you down.
Let's talk about the history of earthquakes in California, because people who've lived through them most people who are alive right now have lived through maybe one or two big earthquakes, maybe lived through the Northridge earthquake, maybe lived through the 71, I think it was, Sylmar earthquake. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking, okay, well, I've been through the big ones. Are those the big ones?
Neither of those earthquake was a big one. We're expecting a very a much larger earthquake on the southern San Andreas. Of course, we've all heard about the San Andreas for many years, and maybe we know that it's way out there. But in recent years, we've understood that the shaking from that earthquake will come into the Los Angeles basin and still be quite strong because of the nature of the ground that we live on. It's soft and it vibrates around during an earthquake, kind of like a bowl of jello in this low-lying basins of the Los Angeles area. And that tends to amplify the shaking, turning up the volume when the shaking comes in, even from these distant earthquakes. So the shakeout scenario earthquake from last year, that was the basis of the Great Southern California Shakeout, was a magnitude 7.8 earthquake on the San Andreas. And we were expecting over 2 to 3 minutes of strong shaking in many areas of Southern California. We're just not prepared for that.
And 2 to 3 minutes, while it doesn't sound like a lot, if you're in an earthquake during that time, it's going to feel like a lot.
They say people who experience earthquakes like that think it will never end. Northridge was about 10 seconds. May have felt like longer for a lot of people. Maybe the building kept shaking a little bit, but this is a lot longer earthquake.
Wow. Yeah, I was actually doing this on the radio during that Northridge earthquake in a high rise, not in this particular building. And then you look at downtown Los Angeles, and the high rise I was in was maybe a 14-story high rise. But you look at these 40 to 50-story, however large they are in Los Angeles, these large, tall, high rise buildings like the U.S. Bank Building, which is, I think, the tallest building west of the Mississippi mm-hmm. River or something like that. And you say to yourself, whoa, you know, what's going to happen to that building or those buildings? Or what would it be like to be on one of the upper floors in that building when an earthquake happens? Because you got to imagine, you know, it's like if you shake a pen, the most shaking is going to happen at the very top versus at the bottom. You got to think, oh, can you survive up there? Are you going to be thrown out thrown through the glass out the window. I mean,
right.
These is...
Those buildings are actually steadied as if they're, you know, pendulums sticking up in the air. And as the shaking comes through, like a pendulum, you can really get those swinging. And we don't know exactly what's going to happen in a big earthquake, but, you know, your single-family, one-story homes will somewhat ride on top of these big waves, whereas those taller buildings will be more strongly shaken.
Wow. So as a municipality, the County of Los Angeles, are we ready in the county? Or can we ever be fully ready for a large magnitude earthquake?
I think the idea is to get the awareness out there, just what Mark is talking about. And what we do with the Los Angeles County's Chief Executive Office, Office of Emergency Management, is one of our parts is we do planning, coordination, we do trainings, we do outreach. And in regards to what we're doing with Mark, with the great California shakeout of 2009, is that we're trying to get out there and outreach. We're trying to prepare our county employees as well as our residents to let them know to register for the Great California Shakeout. And Mark can give you that website address. It's very important that on October 15th at 10:15 a.m., people are ready and that they drop cover and hold on. Not to, during that time, go out and buy a coffee or donut or go eat breakfast. It's important for them to know what to do when they are at their workplace or if they're at school or if they are out in the park. You never know when an earthquake is going to hit. And that's our most important part that we try to emphasize is preparedness. And recently we had the wildfires we refer to as Morrison and the Station Fire, and in the Tujunga area, La Cañada, Flint Ridge, Glendale, Pasadena, all these different cities have been preparing for wildfires, and they were able to prepare themselves as well as their city officials for if potential evacuation plans for how to recover and restart the government and how to recover and restart the lives of the citizens who were affected by the fires. It's all about preparedness. It's about to have a plan, and that's what we're trying to do with the Great California Shakeout of 2009.
It seems daunting to me, though, because when you look at the ability for agencies within Los Angeles County to handle emergencies, we're in pretty good shape. I mean, we have some of the best fire departments in the world. We have some of the best police and sheriff's officers in the world. We have a lot of infrastructure. We have great plans. We have pretty amazing mutual aid. But typically you see a emergency such as a brush fire. Typically you see some type of, you know, big structure fire. And then you see all these mutual aid systems come into play where other agencies will come in and help. And yeah, I think we have a really good handle on that. We do a great job in it. But when you talk about an earthquake, you're talking about a regional disaster where the people who normally would come in to help you are helping their own citizens. So it seems like the potential of overwhelming the system is there, and it's definitely going to happen.
Well, you know, just bringing together earthquakes and fires, you know, large fires often almost always follow large earthquakes. It happened in the Northridge earthquake. Of course, the great San Francisco earthquake in 1906 was mostly...
Most of the damage happened from the fire, yeah.
You know, and the shakeout scenario, San Andreas earthquake, estimates that there will be over 1,600 separate ignitions, separate fires started all over the region. Now, that's more... That require a fire engine in order to deal with. And that's more fire engines that exist in Southern California. So there's a real great concern that those fires will grow and spread beyond the capability that we have to deal with, even with all the mutual aid. We're going to have people coming in from around the country, probably even around the world, to deal with the situation.
So how do we deal with it? Do we let houses burn down? I mean, should everybody with a pool have a pump and a fire hose in their backyard? I mean, how do we deal with these?
Well, things? One recommendation we do have is that individuals, businesses, and such, certainly all have fire extinguishers. Many people don't in their own home. You know, and some of those fires might be preventable or at least be able to be put out when they're still small. We're not encouraging citizens to go out and extinguish large fires through their neighborhood. But stopping the small fires from spreading before they can is a big factor. So people having a fire extinguisher and knowing how to use it is also important.
What about go ahead, Ken.
We're talking about emergency kits. You know, this could be part of the part of your emergency kit is to have a fire extinguisher in your house. Another part of your emergency kit is you have your first aid, and you also have food, water. These are things that if we really did have a catastrophic earthquake, are you ready? That's the question we need to ask all your listeners right now. Are you ready? Are you prepared if we have a 7.8 earthquake on the San Andreas Fault and 2 to 3 minutes of shaking? Can you survive? Can you make it on your own? And I bet you majority of the people that are out there will say they're not ready.
And mostly when we say survival, most people will survive the shaking. It'll be a scary experience and such. You may have a lot of things fall and break, but you'll survive the shaking. What Ken's really talking about is what will the quality of our life be in the weeks to months following that earthquake? And will you be able to survive that living here in Southern California? Will you have to move somewhere else because your home's destroyed and you have to move out to some place where you can even – maybe it's even your job that you can't work anymore because your workplace has been damaged. So what are the ways that you can, work before the earthquake to get prepared so that you will be able to deal with that situation after?
Yeah, they always hear about before, during, and after, the three things you got to deal with. You know, before certainly is your personal and family preparedness, during, as we talked about, your safety, and after, recovery. And those are the key things that you have to be aware of in your forethoughts about earthquakes. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about fires. And one of the interesting things I've noticed, because I've lived through a number of these earthquakes and been on the radio and been at home and et cetera, is that it seems that the gas infrastructure is pretty damn strong, because where you'll have your power out and maybe your water turns brown at the house, most of the time there's still gas coming to the house, it seems like. And that gas, lots of times, will get broken in places like either at the dryer or at the stove, and that gas becomes a interesting fuel for the fire. And if you don't turn off the gas when it's leaking, then it's going to lead to bigger problems. At least that's my observation.
To turn off your gas immediately following an earthquake, if you need to, is a good skill to have. And having the tool to do that, knowing how to turn it at the gas main gas off the house is important. You don't want to turn it off. You only want to turn it off if you can smell a gas leak, or if you can hear the gas leak, or if you can somehow see that there's, the leak is blowing the dirt near the gas valve or something. You only want to do that because if everyone went off and turned off their gas, once the emergency is over, and you really need the gas company to come and turn it back on, make sure everything's okay.
Right.
Because that would take months with everybody having to turn off their gas.
Sure,
They didn't need to in the first place. So only if you need to, and then knowing how, certainly will prevent, greater disaster.
Now, we're becoming a society of less and less landline phones and more cellular phones. And I noticed the cellular phones are much more vulnerable than the landline phones. I noticed that landline phones, even during power failure, your landline phone seemingly would work. And I remember used to always telling people, hey, one of the best things you can do is try and find a payphone if you have to make an emergency call after a disaster, because they're more likely to work than your home phone or cell phone. But you can't find coin phones anymore. They're almost non-existent. And the cell phone networks, the cell phone technology works based upon cell sites, which are numerous. So if you live in an area and that cell site happens to go out, or that cell site doesn't have a generator, you may be SOL. You may have to try and get somewhere else to make your phone call. Not to mention the fact that the circuits just become overwhelmed.
We saw that last year in the Chino Hills earthquake last July, when good size earthquake 5.4 didn't cause any damage to cell sites and such, but people were all calling each other to ask if they had felt it and if they were okay. But mostly, I think it was, did you feel that? Because it wasn't that big of an earthquake. But still, it overwhelmed the cell service very quickly. People were still able to send some text messages. So that's one possible way of still communicating, though that likely will get overwhelmed also.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good point, because the earthquake that they had from Inglewood and the Lenox area just a couple months ago, texting was the way how people communicated instead of overloading the cell phone towers that collapsed at that time because they were just inundated. Again, it's part of your plan. It's part of your emergency plan. What are you going to do if there is an earthquake? Who are you going to notify? Not just in the Los Angeles County area, but do you have somebody outside Los Angeles County, maybe in another state? Maybe it could be your grandparents. It could be your aunts and uncles, your cousins. Write those numbers down. Also, you know, if you have doctors, make sure that you have the doctor's name, phone number, cell phone. If it's Twitter or Facebook, the new social marketing websites that are out there, include that as part of your emergency kit as well. If you have medications, all these different things that Mark is talking about right now and what I'm talking about, it's all about preparedness. And that's what we want to do with the Great California Shakeout for 2009. We want to get people start thinking, we got to be prepared. We're in the disaster capital of the world here in Los Angeles County.
Let me just add that, too, that you really do want to have those what we call out-of-state or out-of-area contacts as your primary place that you're going to call it in a disaster. Do not try to call each other throughout the area. That will overwhelm the phones and also overwhelm them for the emergency response people to be able to use those lines. And so the local phone company will actually cut off our local lines probably for a certain bit of time. All the phones will be down just because of the disaster. The first lines that will come back on will be the long-distance lines. So if everybody in the family has one place to call, then you can kind of get together, coordinate information through that one person.
Yeah, you know, I definitely remember after big earthquakes getting waiting for everybody to get a dial tone once they got one, and then you'd get, I'm sorry, all circuits are busy at this time.
Right.
That familiar recording. Ken Kondo is Program Manager and Public Information Officer for the L.A. County Chief Executive Office in the Office of Emergency Management. Mark Benthian is Communications Director for the Southern California Earthquake Center at USC and also the Executive Director for the Earthquake Country Alliance. And it is 106.7 KROQ, 1-800-520-1067. 1-800-520-1067 is our phone number. Steve from Studio City, hello.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing good, thank you.
Good. I wanted to mention a couple of things that you were just talking about. One of the things that a lot of people can do, it's not very expensive, and it's become mandatory if you do any kind of work on your house now, is the automatic gas shutoff valve. So you don't have to worry about how to turn off the gas. It does it automatically. If there's a big enough quake, it just shuts your gas off automatically at the meter to the house, before the house. Second thing is that the L.A. Fire Department has CERT training. I went out for this recently, brought my son also. It teaches you how to really become prepared for an earthquake. And the main thing you take away from CERT preparedness is that after the big shakeout, the emergency responders, they will not be there to help us. You know, it's not a matter of if the earthquake it's going to happen, it's when. And the other thing is that they won't be there for 2 or 3 or 4 days to be able to help us. So you need to be able to sustain yourself and your family for that 2 to 3 to 4 days. That's a very important thing. And the training is available free. They have it all over the city. You could just go on cert-la.com or org. I don't remember exactly, but it's cert-la. And the training's giving all over for free, and usually it's a couple of nights you can go. There's no charge, and get a really nice certificate from the city when you're done. But you do get something. You take it away, and the main thing they care about is that they don't care if you go help somebody else. The most thing they want to know is that you can take care of yourself and your family, and that's one less family that they have to worry about. And then after that, if you want to go out and help your neighbors or somebody up the street, if you're really confident in doing what you're doing, then there's more people out there to help everybody else.
Oh, that's excellent information.
Yeah, and CERT stands for Community Emergency Response Training, and it's cert-la.com has information for the city's programs, but there are CERT courses all over Southern California offered by many of the cities.
Yes.
Yeah, LA County's a huge county. What, there's 88 or 89 incorporated cities within the county, and then there's unincorporated areas that's still part of the county but not in a city. So it's big.
When you talk about the Los Angeles County operational area, and if you compare it to the whole entire state of California, we are the largest by population. We have 88 cities, including the city of Los Angeles. We have 137 unincorporated areas, And if you think about special districts, we have over 288 special districts. That's including water districts, school districts, sanitation districts. We are the largest by far, and that's what happens if there is a disaster that takes place. Everything is coordinated through the Los Angeles County's operational area in our area, but the counties throughout the state, that's how the system is set up to provide structure and to provide organization.
Right. The county also gives CERT training, too, so I'm not sure what their site is, but there is some coordination. And then they do have refresher courses, like every 3 months you can go back, you know, because yeah, they do give you a lot of information, and I found that after a year you kind of forget some of it, but you're right.
Well, it's like anything. If you don't use it, you forget it. That's like,
right,
you know, that's why CPR training is either 1 year or 2 years, depending if you're Red Cross or Heart Association. But, you know, it's not, believe me, people don't use CPR every day. Most people who learn it will never use it. And 80% of people who do learn it and use it on a family member.
Absolutely. And, you know, saves family members' life.
Yeah. The idea of it is that you will be able to use it if you do have that emergency need. And it's just like why we're practicing drop, cover, and hold on and planning to have this as an annual drill, is people need to practice that in order to respond quickly when they feel that first jolt in an earthquake, not sit there for 5-10 seconds figuring out if that's actually an earthquake or not, but immediately drop under a desk and take care of yourself.
Good call, Steve. I totally appreciate it. Let's get one more call for now, and then we'll keep moving forward here. Mark from San Bernardino, thank you for your call.
Yes, hello. How are you today?
Doing well, thank you.
My question was, I'm from San Bernardino, and I commute to L.A. for schooling. And what would happen if I – well, I take the Metrolink. What would happen if something like that would happen while I'm on the train?
Good question. What happens if you're on public transportation? What happens if you're in the red line in the subway? See, to me, that's even a more scary thought. You know, the only thing I can think of that may be scary would be in the Transbay Tube in San Francisco when something like that happens.
I take the red line actually also once I get off the train to school. So, yeah, that's kind of scary now that you mention it.
Sorry about that.
Well, in all sizes of earthquakes, our infrastructure, including transportation, is particularly vulnerable, and there's been a lot of work to improve the resiliency of our freeways, of course, by Caltrans, and also the railways. You know, the red line in particular. You know, when they built it, they did know that this was earthquake country, and it has very strong, strongly built, and with a lot of features to it that allow it to withstand earthquakes. It does cross a fault, the Hollywood Fault, and apparently where it crosses the fault, the chamber of the tube actually is much larger, and it can allow for some shifting to happen. And of course, they also have a lot of systems in place that will stop the train immediately when they detect shaking. So all those types of factors are being added into our environment and the infrastructure to prevent serious injuries and such. You know, what exactly will happen on a train where you're at is really hard to say, depending on what the shaking is like right there.
I think the big answer, though, would be to listen to the trained personnel and follow their instructions
right.
Carefully. Because people who are the motormen and the conductors for these trains and are well-trained in what to do. And typically organizations like the MTA or the organization that runs the Metrolink, their highest priority is their passenger safety. So these things are things that they're trained for, and you just listen to the uniformed person from that organization, and hopefully they're getting good information.
One of the things that we are really hopeful for, you know, to come in 10, 20 years or so, perhaps sooner, is a early warning system for earthquakes. Not warning before the earthquakes start, but when the earthquake starts out in near the Salton Sea, out in Coachella Valley, that there be a system in place to recognize that earthquake is starting, and to send a signal to us here in L.A. saying earthquake coming, you know, get ready, and that can stop trains, that can stop elevators, bring them to a floor, open the doors.
But when you're talking about an early warning system, we're talking about basically seconds, really, versus minutes or hours.
Potentially
a lot of minutes or hours.
About 20 seconds or so.
Yeah.
But the time needed to put automatic systems into place.
Well, critical, and stop elevators at floors right. instead of in between
right.
floors, those kind of things.
But this is a very expensive system to get going, and hopefully we'll you know, come online in coming years.
Right. 20 seconds, while it doesn't seem like a lot, certainly is enough to open every fire station door so fire trucks don't get stuck inside. Certainly enough, I'm sorry, if you're on an elevator, goes to the next floor and opens the door up. Those kind of things to make rescuing and make the survivability much, much better for you.
And with time and the proper way of communicating to the public that warning, it would give you enough time to get under something to protect yourself.
Yeah, but the thing is that the early warning, you're going to get more early warning the farther away the earthquake is.
Correct.
If the fault is right underneath you, you're not going to get any early warning. So it also unpredictable, but nevertheless, anything that helps us, anything is good here. Good call, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a nice one.
You too. Bye-bye now. All right, we're talking about emergency preparedness, the big one here this morning, earthquakes, disasters. It's interesting. A little scary for some people hear about this, but it's reality. You live in Southern California, guess what? You need to be prepared. Honestly, it's like I tell this to people all the time. These are the kind of classes we need to be talking about in school, more so than things like American Lit and Comp. Okay, maybe that's for college, but you know, if I learned emergency preparedness in high school versus American Lit and Comp, I would be much more prepared instead of having to learn it the hard way after the earth shakes.
Well, you know, the important thing is that we're talking. And that's what the research shows, the social science research that studied, you know, what motivates people to get prepared. And one of the main factors is that people talk about earthquakes and disasters with each other, that it's not some secret that, you know, what we've done to be prepared and that we feel kind of, you know, sheepish about showing off all the safety things that we've done. Maybe somehow that looks kind of like we're paranoid or something, and it shouldn't be that way. We should be proud of what we've done to protect ourselves and our family. We should be talking about it with people. That's one of the things that the Great California Shakeout is doing, is being something so big that people have to talk about earthquakes without actually having an earthquake. So the Shakeout last year had over 5 million participants throughout Southern California. This year, we're statewide, and we already have 4.3 million participants registered for the drill this October 15th. And people can register by going to www.shakeout.org.
Okay, it's 106.7 K-Rock KROQ here, 6:31 on a Sunday morning, September 6th. Scott Mason, that's me. Good morning to you. Every Sunday morning, we do open line. Emergency preparedness is the topic this morning. Kent Kondo, the program manager and PIO for the LA County Chief Executive Office, Office of Emergency Management, is here with me. Along with Mark Bentley, and he is the communications director for Southern California Earthquake Center at USC and the executive director of the Earthquake Country Alliance. And we're all chatting about earthquakes this morning. Very good. 1-800-520-1067 if you have a question, comment, thought, some fear that you'd like quenched or maybe, you know, amplified. Who knows? Depending on what the question is. One guy was calling about, he takes a train, and I happened to mention the subway. I think that a little light went off above his head. So that's what we're chatting about this morning. It is going to happen here in Southern California. We will have another earthquake. We will have earthquakes through the entire life of this earth because earthquakes are a natural occurrence on this earth. We live on these tectonic plates that move in different directions, and they move very, very slowly. And every once in a while, the pressure has to give way here, and that's when we get an earthquake. I did learn something in that course.
It's good to note, too, that the caller was talking. He lives in San Bernardino County, but he works in Los Angeles County. And what Los Angeles County Chief Executive Office, Office of Emergency Management, has done is we're celebrating our 20th anniversary with the Emergency Survival Program. And that's where 15 counties throughout the state of California, the governor's office, Southern California Edison, American Red Cross, Mark's organization, we all partner together, and for the 12 months, each month has, we call, an emergency preparedness action step. And for those people who are interested in finding out more about it, go to our website at www.lacoa.org. And what that means, it's called Los Angeles County Operational Area. And again, it's www.lacoa.org. And on that web page, you will find the new alert system for mass evacuations called Alert LA County. You can register online with your telephone numbers, your cell phone numbers, So right now we're experiencing wildfires. We could be experiencing floods in the wintertime. And if
and local, we will experience earthquakes.
And earthquakes. Okay. And if there needs to be a mass evacuation, then it's available there. But also our emergency survival program information is there too. And it's called ESP Focus. So, you know, your listeners, if you want to find out more about how to be prepared, it's all there on the webpage.
You know, there's a lot of talk, being in the radio business here, there's a lot of talk about the emergency alert system and upgrading that. And there's a whole lot of talk about putting FM chips into cellular phones, because if that happens, we can send out emergency information. And FM radio is like the perfect thing, because we could reach with one transmitter lots and lots of people at the same time, as opposed to sending out a text message, where if you try and send a text message out to the entire population of your cell customers, it may take hours to get through the whole system. And that would be very interesting, something that would actually come up on your phone without you requesting it in an emergency that gives you emergency information. And information is the key. People, you know, it's like sitting on an airplane for me. I could sit on an airplane on the ground for a couple hours if I have to, but not knowing why is very, very frustrating. When the pilot comes on and says, hey, we're sitting on the ground because there's bad weather at the other end, et cetera, et cetera, the passengers and people will accept that because they know why. But not knowing what's going on, not knowing what to do, not having the information can be very, very scary in an earthquake. Having that information, even though the activity stays the same, having the information is very calming to people.
Well, one example of that has become very popular over the years is the ability to get recent earthquake information. So when an earthquake happens, people can go online and they can see where the earthquake was, what the magnitude of the earthquake was, and follow all the aftershocks.
And even participate in it. Even participate. Right. Say how it felt in their area.
So the CISN.org for the whole of the state has the recent earthquake information. That stands for California Integrated Seismic Network, CISN.org. Also data.scec.org, data.skec.org, SKEC is my organization, has those recent earthquake maps. And then through there also you can, what you're talking about is the Did You Feel It site from the U.S. Geological Survey, which allows you to report on what your experience was. And it's not just you know, writing something and sending an email. It's actually filling out a form that describes the level of shaking that you experienced by, you know, what happened to you.
That's real versus that is what people really felt versus looking at the earthquake map and seeing where it was. And, you know, based upon the depth of an earthquake, the size of an earthquake, you might feel different things.
And the type of ground that you're on versus if you're on soft rock versus hard rock, you'll definitely feel the earthquake very differently. And so, you know, there's enough seismometers in Southern California and the state to make maps quickly after, called shake maps. But the Did You Feel It also provides a type of mapping where it takes input from everybody all over the area and makes a nice color map showing where the shaking was most intense.
That's if you have internet access after an earthquake, because depending on the size of it, you may or may not.
Right. You may just not have electricity.
Exactly. And having, you know, think about that. What is it that I really need to have? What is it that would be important to me? You know, electricity is one of those things that's going to go out quick. You know, I think my analysis of things that go out utility-wise are first their cable television, because just the way cable is, there's so many there could be 5 to 10 amplifiers between the cable company and your house, and every one of them is like pole-mounted kind of thing, and all you have to do is lose electricity to one of them, and you know, your cable's out. Then it's your power, because power, depending on what neighborhood you live in, are above ground lines, and those poles get shook, and numerous transformers, and it kind of goes on from there. Where you lose water, at least I find that you lose water and gas kind of last. But you know, all that's a toss up. All that's a shoot of the dice to say what you're going to lose. You need to be prepared to lose all of it.
Well, and the other thing too is as part of the action steps is, you know, you tie off or you secure your bookcases. If you have mementos, you know, you can buy what they call earthquake putty, and you can place that underneath your item that you want to protect, and then you can place it on the bookcase or in the display case.
You know, it's interesting, because people will make their earthquake kits after the earthquake. That's their reminder. typically by then it's too late. You'll make an earthquake kit, you'll put it in the garage or whatever, and you know what happens is, oh man, you know, I really needed a flashlight, I really need something. And throughout the years after that, you'll borrow from the earthquake kit or things that go bad in the earthquake kit. Then when you really need it, it won't be there. But what'll happen is the earth will shake, and that will be your, oh yeah, I gotta go fix that earthquake kit. By then it's too late.
How many people remember civil defense?
No, the CD little logo that they used to have.
Remember, and all the messages from back then now apply. Be prepared. Are you ready? These are the same messages that they were doing back then during the start of World War II, the Cold War.
Yep, and they were marking off safe places in case we got hit by a bomb by the bad guys. You know, I think the amount of things we're worrying about now exceeds what they were talking about back then, because we're, you know, obviously, you know, terrorism is something that we should always be concerned about. But these natural disasters, there wasn't the emphasis on those back then.
Well, what's happened is the civil defense areas here in Los Angeles County, and we have 8 different we call now disaster management areas, but they are the ones who were the original civil defense areas in Los Angeles County. And they are connected directly with the city's city managers, the mayor's office. So if we have a catastrophic earthquake like Mark is talking about, then those disaster management area coordinators are going to coordinate all the efforts with the citizens, as well as the government, in ensuring that everyone is safe and that government is still operating. And it still exists. And that's based off the civil defense concept.
We're talking a little bit about the Great California Shakeout, which is coming up 10:15. Is that it? 10:15
a.m. on 10:15.
Yes. It's a little confusing, but okay.
That's meant to be simple, so we'll
it's hard to say though. The thing is, this is not the first one. We did one last year.
Right.
Now it's great that we do this, but do we go back to the public and evaluate the whole public? Because it's great to do these drills. It's great to talk about it, but unless you go back and evaluate where the weak spots are, you're losing quite a bit. So do we go back as a government and evaluate with the citizens where the weaknesses are, where the strengths and weaknesses are?
At all levels, and it really needs to be done in throughout the whole state, understanding the level of preparedness. Last year, there was a major survey, really the largest of its kind ever in California, understanding the level of household readiness in California. And that type of study was supported by the state, and hopefully the results will be out soon as it gets finalized, done by a team at UCLA. That type of study needs to be repeated, you know, maybe every 2 years, to understand how we're doing at moving the needle in preparedness.
Right, because you can take a test, and unless you get the grade back from the teacher, you have no idea right. You did. You could think you aced it, and you failed it.
And we want to be doing everything possible to increase preparedness, and these types of, you know, evaluations provide that feedback to us on how we're doing, and we need that to be happening over time. The shakeout last year, you know, we learned a lot, both the participants in terms of what to expect in an earthquake. They practice what they would do. The organizations practice what they do. The government agencies practice what they do. Learning, you know, along the way, we need to be doing those types of drills. The shakeout will be annual and statewide, repeating that so that we continue to learn what we need to do during an earthquake and other disasters.
All right, let's.
And what I learned too with other disasters being there at Ground Zero is that what people will say to me is that, you know, it's all about practice, 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 practice.
Practice makes perfect. Mom used to say that.
That's correct. That's correct.
And it also, you know, you mentioned that people get prepared after an earthquake. We're creating the shakeout is that once a year thing for people to get ready by. We can't count on an earthquake to happen. We can't go out and create an earthquake
right.
to happen. But the shakeout is kind of the replacement for that. It's the get ready by then. Sure, you know, it's kind of all made up here. It's not an earthquake, and knock on wood, is not going to happen on October 15th, but that we're working as if we're all getting ready, and that by doing that each year, hopefully when the earthquake does happen, we'll be automatically knowing what to do to react.
Let's jump on some more phone calls here. Marlene from Northridge, thank you for your phone call.
Hello. Good morning. I was actually wondering, how realistic is my concern with living in a multiple-story building? Like, I always have this fear that somehow the floors are going to just fall through.
Well, there was that one building on Reseda Boulevard after the Northridge earthquake that was three and became two. And you know, the myth or legend or truth, I don't know, is that there was a fire station right down the street, and they drove by the building, and it looked intact. They didn't realize that there was only two floors there because the bottom floor was pancaked. That's true.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And
part of that building was collapsing. It really comes down to the type of building you're in, how old it is. Do you know how old your building is?
Not exactly. It's not a brand new building, but it's definitely not very old. It looks really sturdy.
And there are different types of buildings, too. The building that collapsed, the Northridge Meadows apartment building in the Northridge earthquake, was what we call a tuck-under parking building, where there are parking spaces typically maybe in the back alley or even along the front sometimes, with one car or two cars in each space with poles holding up the building. And those poles do really well resisting gravity, normally keeping the upper floors up. But when the earth starts to shake back and forth, they're really not designed for that. And that's what collapsed in that building, so in that earthquake. And
okay.
And there is stuff that there are methods to secure those types of buildings. And if you live in one of those buildings, you want to check with your landlord or the building owner to see if they've done those preventative actions.
Okay, so is the most ideal response for me to just kind of take cover if it happens while I'm in my apartment, or would maybe a hallway, like a frame, be better? Because that's what I was taught as a child.
You don't want to try to move too far in any earthquake, because moving is when people tend to get injured as they're moving around. Think of trying to get someplace like trying to move down the aisle of an airplane during strong turbulence. You're going to be banging into things. Things are going to be falling into you. So don't try to get anywhere too far, but know safe places in each room that you're in. If you can get under something or get up next to an interior wall, get down the ground, make yourself as small as possible. Cover your head and neck with your arms and protect yourself.
Marlene, okay. I have a question for you. Do you have a emergency preparedness plan for your building? Like, do you have like different people that can be like monitors on different floors of the building?
No.
Well, I'm hoping that you could be that emergency preparedness ambassador for your building. You know, if you could look at our website, www.lacoa.org, and prepare your building for an earthquake or for any other natural disaster or man-made event. It's always about being prepared, and I'm very glad you called us this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for your feedback. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Let's talk to Tina, who's calling from Long Beach. Hi, Tina.
Hi. Good morning. I sort of had the same question. I live in a two, I'm in the lower apartment, and there's one above me. It was built in 1961. There's no parking structures underneath us, and we're not on poles. Same question she had: would we be safer under the table or in the doorway? Or, you know, we have a school right across the street. I told the boys, if you can get out, you know, run to the playground at the school where it's open.
That's where you hope to be when the earth starts shaking. That would be the safest place,
right,
in the middle of a football field. But
right.
running there when it's shaking, I don't even, you know, may not even be possible to run or move.
If you're inside during an earthquake, stay inside. A lot of people get injured moving to the outside where things are perhaps falling off the building. In the San Simeon earthquake in 2003 up the coast, the only people who were killed were people who ran outside a store. And the brick facade of the store fell off onto them. So stay inside, and if you are inside, it is best to get under something to protect yourself from things that might be falling. So drop cover and hold on. Really not recommended to try to get to a doorway anymore.
And by the way, just every, I think it goes without saying, but I should mention it, with earthquakes come aftershocks. And sometimes those aftershocks are going to be larger than the main earthquake themselves. So you got to be prepared for that.
Yeah, many aftershocks can, with a big earthquake like we're talking about on the San Andreas, there could be aftershocks really anywhere in Southern California, and they could be sizable. There could be a Northridge-sized earthquake that is a aftershock of the big earthquake on the San Andreas, and it could be anywhere in the region. So you need to be ready for that to happen again if the ground starts to shake, to protect yourself again and again and again as those aftershocks continue. And I would just say, in terms of the building, it sounds like the type of building that would be all right in an earthquake, but again, it depends on where the earthquake was, what the type of shaking it generates is, and the type of ground that you're on. But drop cover, hold on, is probably the best idea.
Right. We had one a few months ago that shook us up a little bit. And see, we've all lived in a one-story home and never in an apartment building. So this has kind of got the boys a little freaked out about the earthquake thing. Okay, but thank you very much for the advice.
Thank you for calling. You know, a lot of, that's the common thing. Everyone's freaked out talking about earthquakes. Everybody, there's, because it's the unknown. It's that unknown I was talking about before. People fear the unknown. But the better prepared you are, the more you understand about what can happen and what you should do and what you can do to make your survivability better, to give yourself better odds of survivability, the better you're going to end up. Everybody who's listening, or nearly everybody who's listening to me, who's lived in Southern California for a sizable amount of time, has been through an earthquake. And hey, you're alive! Okay? And it will happen again and again. And being prepared is the key.
I must say, it is remarkable as I go and talk to people around the region that how many new people, though, there are to California, and how many of our young people really don't remember the Northridge earthquake. You know, we're talking almost college-age students who were too young to remember the Northridge earthquake now. And so their earthquake experience is something like the Chino Hills earthquake last year or the Inglewood earthquake this year, and they think that's an earthquake. We just don't And even with if you experience a Northridge earthquake, it's not the scale of earthquake we're talking about that could happen on the San Andreas or some of our other nearby faults.
And you think about that. And that was a scary, large earthquake. At least to me, it was. And I was, like I said, I was on the ninth floor of a 15-story building. And the thing I remember the most not was we played CDs back in those days instead of having stuff on computer, and every CD in the room was on the floor, every single one, and we had a Pepsi machine down the hall, and that Pepsi machine must have moved 15 or 20 feet off the wall and was right in the middle of the corridor instead of being up against the wall. I'm thinking to myself, wow, it's kind of crazy stuff, but you got to be prepared for it.
Well, the other thing is I was going to tell Tina too to take a look at the emergency survival program that we have on our webpage, and learn about what they need to do to prepare and how to educate her children in regards to if an earthquake hits or if a natural disaster or man-made event. That's what emergency survival program is for, and we hope that she'll be able to call us at 323-980-2267. That's my direct line, and you know, I can get you that information. Whatever you need, we're here to help.
Okay, let's get with smartphone calls here. A lot of phones ringing this morning. Miguel's from Glendale. Thank you for calling, Miguel.
Hey, how you guys doing? Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hey, Mark, what are you doing up so early on a Sunday? This is Miguel from Earth Sciences.
Hey, Miguel. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm asking myself that question, but talking to the public.
Yeah, I just want to bring up a point that it's actually much easier to be earthquake prepared than people think. There are actually pre-packed earthquake kits that people can purchase that already have like flashlights and like a radio, batteries, even water and some nutrition bars. And these packages are good up to 10 years, and people can just buy them and keep them in their closet, and you know, pull them out when they need to. So. You know, it's actually much easier to you know, be earthquake prepared.
I've always questioned the prepackaged foods, not because they're bad or anything, but I would think that after an earthquake, if you have to live on your own without any outside help for maybe a week, let's just say, that I would kind of want to try and stay on the same diet that I've been on the rest of my life, because the last thing I want to do is I get the runs from food I'm not used to when you don't have running water or something. I mean, that's just kind of. That's my brain thinking about food. I don't know if that's legitimate or not, but I always think, God, I want to have the similar food that I eat every day because I want to be, quote-unquote, regular.
You know, the type of kits that Miguel is talking about are good to have in your car or maybe at work if you end up being trapped there for a couple of days. But, you know, at home, a lot of us will have, you know, canned food and other food that maybe we've bought for our normal diet, and that could be used. So certainly you want to be able to have a a regular old-fashioned can opener,
right?
Not an electric can opener, though a lot of cans now are coming with the pop-tops. Those are really good to choose if you have a choice. You know, and just to be building up a supply as you go to the grocery store and add a couple of items that, you know, you can put away somewhere to have as your kit. The other important thing is storing water. And you want to store more water than you have now. You know, however much water you've stored, add more. And, you know, ideally you want to have 2 weeks of supply, whether it's a gallon per person or pet in your household per day. So, you know, you can buy these large barrels. I have this 55-gallon water barrel in my garage. Wow. You know, and the water will last 5 years in that. And, you know, kind of put that away and have it ready when you need it.
And I guess every few years, recycle the water.
Right.
Now, cash. We don't mention it enough, I think. But cash will be king, and we've seen this before. So
small bills,
because people live on, you know, right? People live on plastic these days, and you know, when the credit card machine can't check with the bank on your balance, when all the power is down, or when all the ATMs are down, guess what? Your plastic's going to be worth a piece of plastic, and cash will be king. So that has to, I would imagine that has to be one of the important items in the earthquake.
There's stories after the Northridge earthquake of people buying a bottle of water for $20 or $100 or, you know, but the Northridge earthquake was the type of earthquake that you could walk a couple miles maybe and get to a store and buy water and other items. You know, the biggest earthquake we're talking about here will affect the whole region. And you may be buying water from your neighbors and, you know, trying to... where you're going to need cash, even at the stores, you're going to need cash. And you don't want to only have, you know, a bunch of 20s. You want to have ones and fives so that you can buy what you need with that low.
Really important point. Miguel, thanks for the phone call. Let's talk to Ed, who's calling from Burbank. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, your guests are saying that during an earthquake, you guys should just, if you're inside the house or something, you should just get on the floor and cover yourself up. I mean, my parents are in their 80s, and they cannot get to the floor very easily. What should they do?
This is a really good question. And, you know, in an earthquake, if you're walking around, and particularly if you're elderly, it will throw you to the floor. So it's as soon as you have that initial jolt that might be a warning, they should try to get down low before they're knocked to the floor. You know, drop to the floor before the earthquake drops you.
Okay.
They're less likely to be injured that way. You know, if they're sitting in a chair, you know, and this also applies to people who are perhaps in a wheelchair, you know, stay in the chair if you're not going to be able to get down quickly enough, but cover your head with your hands and arms, protect yourself from stuff that might be falling.
Good points. I appreciate it, Ed.
Thank you.
Okay, have yourself a great day. And Richard from Laverne. Yeah, you're going to be the last call this morning. I'm doing good.
I was actually just commenting on the fact about keeping cases of water, jugs of water, a gallon per person. What you want to do is probably shake that up about once a month if you're going to be storing it for long periods of time, because water can die, and it really can become really bad for you if you're drinking still water. So I would recommend shaking it up maybe once a month, you know, once every other month, if you're going to be storing it for long periods of time. Otherwise, it's pretty much no good to you.
Interesting. I had not heard that before. I know if you, I have a generator at home. I know if you have a generator, you want to make sure that the diesel generator, for example, you want to make sure the fuel doesn't go bad, because it will sitting there for a long time. And there's things that you can do to keep the fuel, quote unquote, healthy.
Right. Well, I mean, in our bottled water does have an expiration date, and it's not about the water itself. It's about the bottle it's in and the plastic leaching into the water. So you want to make sure that whatever you're storing water in, you've looked at the expiration date on that, or that you recycle that water. You know, if it's a type of soda bottle type of container, you know, every 6 months or so, recycle that.
You know, listen, water is cheap enough. You could buy a couple of cases when they're on sale and keep them in your garage or wherever, too. You know, and you can do that fairly often.
We have a lot of these types of tips about water and what you should have in your kit and what type of actions you should do. When you register for the Great California Shakeout at shakeout.org, you'll be able to have information that will help you get ready for earthquakes that happen anytime.
Good point, Richard. Thank you. All right, so we're almost out of time. Let's talk about where people can get more information. Let's talk about, there's plenty of places where people can find out more about earthquakes, plenty of places where people can find out more about what they should be doing, plenty of places to find out about the shakeout that's coming up. So let's start with that.
So again, the shakeout, shakeout.org is the one place to go for all the information about it. We have 4.3 million people already signed up. We're going for, well, we'd like to go for 10 million throughout the state. We'll see how we do this year. We've also been talking about drop, cover, hold on throughout the hour. And we actually have a website called dropcoverholdon.org. And that has all the information about what to do during an earthquake, no matter where you're at. If you're at home, if you're at school, if you're at work, if you're in a tall building, if you're at the beach, et cetera. And you can get that information. There's also earthquakecountry.info has a lot of resources about earthquakes, why they happen, where they happen, and how to get prepared. Including a booklet called Putting Down Roots in Earthquake Country, which you can order online.
And that's just, and that's also for individuals, but as well as for businesses as well, too. Because that's another component that we're focusing on this year about the Great California Shakeout is to outreach to businesses and organizations to have their employees, their staff ready in the event that we have a catastrophic earthquake.
When we have the earthquake.
We never know. That's right.
Wow. It's going to happen, gang. So you should be prepared. You will do better when you are prepared. There is no doubt about it. You live in Southern California. Hello. The ground will shake. Let's just hope that everyone's prepared and we get through it. We will, because we've done before. History shows. We're all sitting here today. And you know what? There's been some big earthquakes in California. So it's a... the more prepared you are, the better off you'll be, the better you'll get through it. It's for you, your family, your loved ones, your neighbors, etc. So I appreciate it. Ken Kondo, Program Manager and PIO for the LA County Chief Executive Office, Office of Emergency Services, thank you so much for coming in. Mark Benthian, Communications Director for the Southern California Earthquake Center at USC and Executive Director for the Earthquake Country Alliance, appreciate it. Always good information. It's always very important that we get these things out before the ground shakes so people are prepared. 10-15 on 10-15, sink that into your brain, remember. And when you say being a part of this, this could, being a part doesn't mean you're putting your hand up and you're volunteering to go out and do something somewhere. It could be as simple as you acknowledging that time and drop, cover, and holding during that particular time. This is not a gigantic right. commitment that you're asking
it's
for.
It's for individuals, for families, for schools, for businesses to do a drill on that day, practice what you do during an earthquake, and there will be on the website. We'll even have sound effects you can listen to while you're under the table.
There you go. That'd be perfect. Right, play them through your big speakers in the house. Right. All right, gentlemen, I truly appreciate it. And right now, we're going to get back to some great music here. 106.7 K-Rock, KROQ, the Labor Day to Z weekend underway.
It's the K-Rock Labor Day to Z weekend. 106.7 KROQ FM. HD1. Pasadena, Los Angeles.
All systems go.
LA and OC's only new rock. The world famous K-Rock.